and myself, Chairman Owen Egan, present. Thank you. This meeting is open to the public and is being conducted solely through the use of electronic equipment due to the COVID-19 pandemic. It will be recorded in its entirety. For everyone participating in today's meeting, please remember to identify yourself first for the recording each time that you are called upon to speak. So that's each time you're called upon, please identify yourself. All participants are expected to conduct themselves in a respectful manner at all times and not to interrupt the commission operations. If the commission believes any person's conduct is disruptive, that person will be placed on mute at the direction of the chairman. Further disruption may lead to that person's removal from the telephonic meeting. When the commission conducts a vote, it will be by roll call. It will conduct a roll. The first item is consideration of the minutes of the commission's regular meeting of February 23rd, 2022. Do I hear a motion?
Mr. Chairman, this is Commissioner Streeter. I'd like to move adoption of the minutes of the commission's regular meeting of February 23rd, 2022.
Is there a second?
Commissioner Hankins, second.
All in favor, I'll conduct a roll call. Commissioner Barry? Commissioner Chavez?
Yes.
Commissioner Einhorn?
Yes.
Commissioner Zeshi?
Yes.
Commissioner Hankins?
Commissioner Hankins?
Yes.
Mr. Streeter? Streeter?
Yes.
Mr. Winkler? Winkler? And Owen Egan? Yes. Passes unanimously. Next, we will consider the hearing officer's reports. The hearing officer's reports are all publicly accessible on our website at www.ct.gov/FOI through links on the agenda for today's meeting. I will call the docket. If you are a party and wish to address the commission on a particular docket number, please let me know when I call it, and we will mark it ready. We will take up the cases in the order that they are called, starting with docket number FIC 2020-0270, Marlando Daly versus Armando Perez, Chief Police Department, City of Bridgeport. Are you there, Mr. Daly?
Yeah, I'm here.
Would you like this marked ready?
Sure.
All right, we'll mark it ready. Is anyone there from the City of Bridgeport?
Good afternoon. This is Dina Scalo, Assistant City Attorney for the City of Bridgeport. I'm counsel for the respondents.
Thank you, Attorney Scalo. That matter's marked ready. Next is docket number FIC 2021-0014, Samuel Davis versus Angel Quiros, Commissioner, State of Connecticut Department of Correction. Are you there, Mr. Davis?
Yes. Yes, sir.
Would you like us to mark this ready?
Yes.
Is there anyone there for the State of Connecticut?
Yes, this is Attorney McCurdy.
Attorney McCurdy?
Yes.
Thank you, Attorney McCurdy. Back to the docket number FIC 2021-0404, Alejandro Velez versus James Ravella, State of Connecticut, Department of Emergency Services and Public Protection, et al. Is there anyone here on that matter? Mr. Velez, are you there? Is there anyone there from the State of Connecticut?
Yeah.
Who is that? Sorry, I didn't get your name. Is there anyone there from the State of Connecticut on our land, Alejandro Velez versus James Ravella, State of Connecticut, Department of Emergency Services and Public Protection?
Mr. Chairman, this is Mary Schwind. The respondents will not be participating in this matter.
Okay, thank you. I thought I heard someone respond, so I'll entertain a motion, please.
Mr. Chairman, this is Commissioner Streeter. Seeing that the neither the complainant nor the respondent are here, I move adoption of the hearing officer's report.
A second?
Commissioner Hankins, second.
Motion's been made and seconded. I'll take a, is there a discussion? I'll take a roll call vote on those in favor. Commissioner Chavez?
Yes.
Mr. Einhorn?
Yes.
Commissioner Fizeshi?
Yes.
Commissioner Hankins?
Yes.
Commissioner Streeter?
Yes.
And Owen Egan, yes. Passes unanimously. Next is a docket number FIC 2019-0600, Elizabeth Maurer versus Office of Legal Affairs, City of Stamford, et al. Is there anyone here on that matter?
Good afternoon. This is Attorney Zachary Sherin for the respondent.
Wish to be heard. This was a dismissal.
Well, I was only attending if the complainant is not appearing, then we're satisfied with the proposed decision.
Mr. Chairman, Mary Schwind, the complainant has indicated that she will not participate today.
Thank you, Attorney Schwind. I would entertain a vote, a motion.
Mr. Chairman, this is Commissioner Streeter. Seeing that the complainant is not present and there's no objection from the respondent, I move adoption of the hearing officer's report.
Is there a second?
Commissioner Hankins, second.
Motion's been made and seconded. Is there discussion? Hearing none, I'll take a roll call of those in favor. Mr. Chavez?
Yes.
Reinhorn?
Yes.
Mr. Fizeshi?
Yes.
Mr. Hankins?
Yes.
Mr. Streeter?
Yes.
And Owen Egan, yes. Passes unanimously. Thank you. Thank you, Attorney Shearing. Next is docket number FIC 2020-0344, Patricia Confrancesco versus Chief, Fire Department, City of New Haven, et al. This was withdrawn. Is there anyone here on this matter?
No, Mr. Chairman. Mary Schwind again. No one will be participating.
Thank you. I'd entertain a motion.
Mr. Chairman, this is Commissioner Streeter. As you mentioned, this was withdrawn and dismissed. I move adoption of the hearing officer's report.
Is there a second?
Commissioner Hankins, second.
Motion's been made and seconded. Is there a discussion? Hearing none, I'll take a roll call of those in favor. Commissioner Chavez?
Yes.
Reinhorn?
Abstain, please.
Mr. Fizeshi?
Yes.
Mr. Hankins?
Yes.
Mr. Streeter?
Yes.
And Owen Egan, yes. Passes with one abstention. All right. Next is docket number 2020-0428, Vernon Lethbridge, Jr. versus Attorney General, State of Connecticut, Office of the Attorney General, et al. Is there anyone here on that matter?
Yes.
Who is that?
Vernon Lethbridge, Your
Thank
Honor.
You. Would you like to be heard?
Yes, Your Honor.
We'll mark that ready, Mr. Lethbridge. Is there anyone here from the Attorney General's office?
Yes, Commissioner. It's Antoria Howard from the Office of the Attorney General.
And it's Antoria?
Yes.
A-N-T-O-R-I-A?
Yes.
Howard, H-A-H-O-W-A-R-D.
Yes. Thank you.
Thank you, Attorney Howard. All right, we'll mark that ready. Next is packet number FIC 2020-0446, Timothy Leonard versus Office of the City Attorney, Bridgeport, and City of Bridgeport. Is there anyone here on that matter? Timothy Leonard?
Good afternoon, Mrs.
Timothy Leonard, you're not there. Is there anyone there from the City of Bridgeport?
Yes, good afternoon again. This is Attorney Scalo for the City of Bridgeport. I would like to be heard on this one.
You want to be heard. All right, we'll mark this ready.
Thank you.
Thank you. Next is docket number FIC 2020-0583, Sean Murphy versus First Selectman, Town of North Coney, et al. Is there anyone here on this matter?
Yes, Sean Murphy, the complainant. I wish to be heard.
Thank you. Anyone here from the city, from the town of North Stoney?
Nicholas Keppel, attorney for the town of North Stonington, and I will wish to be heard, please.
Thank you, Attorney Keppel. I'll note for the record, Mr. Murphy, I know Attorney Keppel He was a probate judge. I am a probate judge. I served with him. I do not feel that I have any conflict here, that I can hear this and be fair and impartial. But if you would like me to recuse myself, I'm happy to recuse myself. Do you want me to recuse myself, Mr. Murphy?
No, sir. It won't be necessary.
Okay. We'll mark that ready. Thank you. Next is docket number FIC 2020-0647, Ethan Book versus Republican Registrar of Voters, City of Bridgeport et al. Is there anyone here on that matter? Okay.
This is Attorney Scalo for the respondents. I'm here on that matter.
Would you like to be heard?
Yes, please. I'd like to be heard briefly.
All right. We'll mark that ready.
Thank you.
Thank you, Attorney Scalo. Next is docket number FIC 2020-0653, Dawn Martin versus Chief Police Department, City of Bridgeport et al. This is a withdrawal. Is there anyone here on that matter?
This is Attorney Scalo from the Office of the City Attorney of Bridgeport. I'm here on this matter, but I understand that it was withdrawn as well.
There is an amendment, I believe, that needs to be made.
Yes, Mr. Chin. I'm sorry.
Do you wish to be heard?
No, I do not. If it was withdrawn, then we would support the withdrawal.
Okay. Attorney Schwind has an amendment that needs to be made. Attorney Schwinn?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Yesterday afternoon, the commission did receive a withdrawal in this matter, so I'd like to propose the following amendment to dismiss the matter based on the withdrawal. And it would be simply to delete the second introductory paragraph, which begins in the report after consideration, and substitute in its place by email dated and filed March 8th, 2022, the complainant withdrew the complaint. And then the second sentence, the commission takes administrative notice of such withdrawal. Then delete the findings, 1 through 20, and delete the orders, 1 through 4, and substitute as the sole remaining order, number 1, based on the withdrawal of the complaint, the case is hereby dismissed.
I'd entertain a motion on the amendment.
Mr. Chairman, this is Commissioner Streeter. I would move that we make the amendments as requested by Attorney Schwind.
Your second?
Commissioner Hankins, second.
Is there any discussion on the amendment only?
Mr. Chairman, this is Commissioner Chavez. I have a question about the fact that the last item in the order, number 4, indicates that the commission was disturbed by the unexplained lengthy delay in providing the statistics and cautioning against further delays in the future. I'm just wondering about the status of that admonition to the respondent if the report is amended in the way that's been proposed.
Attorney Schwinn?
Well, yes, I'm proposing that order be removed because it's based on the findings which are in the report. And since the matter is withdrawn, we've got case law that basically provides that the commission cannot make findings. So that's why we, I'm proposing the amendment. We've had these situations in the past. And frankly, at one time, the commission took a situation like this to court, up to the appellate court, and we were informed by the appellate court that, no, we cannot make findings once we receive a withdrawal. That's why it's working out this way.
This is Commissioner Chavez. Thank you for giving that clarification.
Thank you.
Is there any other discussion? All right, with regard to the amendment, all in favor, I'll take a roll call. Commissioner Chavez?
Yes.
Commissioner Einhorn?
Yes.
Commissioner Fuzeshi?
Yes.
Mr. Hankins?
Yes.
Mr. Streeter?
Yes.
And Owen Egan, yes. So the amendment passes unanimously. Is there any discussion on the matter as amended? If not, I'd entertain a motion on the matter as amended.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, Commissioner Street, I'll move the amended hearing officer's report for adoption.
Second, is there a second?
Commissioner Hankins, second.
Your discussion on this matter? All right, I'll take a roll call of those in favor. Commissioner Chavez?
Yes.
Commissioner Einhorn?
Yes.
Commissioner Fizeshi?
Yes.
Commissioner Hankins?
Yes.
Mr. Streeter?
Yes.
And myself, Owen Egan, yes. Passes unanimously as amended. Thank you. All right. So now we'll go to the next matter. It's docket number FIC 2021-0137, Glenn Ballard versus Town Manager, Town of Granby, et al. Glenn Ballard, are you there, please?
I am here, but basically just to listen. I don't really have anything further to say on the matter other than thank you to the hearing officer and to the commission for your work.
All right, thank you. Is there anyone here from the Town of Granby?
Richard Roberts, Halloran and Sage, attorney on behalf of the Town of Granby, and likewise, I have nothing to say and thank the commission for its work in this regard.
All right. No one has anything to say, so then I'd entertain a motion.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, Commissioner Streeter, seeing that the respondent and the complainants have no objection to the report, I move adoption of the hearing officer's report.
Is there a second?
Commissioner Hankins, second.
Motion's been made and seconded. Is there discussion? Hearing none, I'll take a roll call of those in favor. Commissioner Chavez?
Yes.
Commissioner Einhorn?
Yes.
Mr. Giuseppe?
Yes.
Mr. Hankins?
Yes.
Mr. Streeter?
Yes.
And Owen Egan, yes. Passes unanimously. Thank you, Mr. Ballard. Thank you, Attorney Roberts. Last is docket number FIC 2021-0454, David Traco, Conservation Commission, Town of Wallingford, and Town of Wallingford. Dismissed for failure to prosecute. Is there anyone here on this matter?
Attorney Small is here for the respondents. I have no objection.
Mr. Trachel or Trachel, are you there? Hearing no one, I'd entertain a motion.
Yes, Mr. Mm-hmm. Chairman. Commissioner Streeter, the complainant failed to appear and is not here today. I'll move adoption of the hearing officer's report.
Is there a second?
Commissioner Hankins, second.
Motion's been made and seconded. Is there discussion? Hearing none, I'll take a roll call in favor. DeVay?
Yes.
Mr. Einhorn?
Yes.
Mr. Fuseschi?
Yes.
Mr. Hankins?
Yes.
Mr. Streeter?
Yes.
And myself, Chairman Owen Egan, yes. Passes unanimously. All right, so now we move to the active matters. Before we consider these cases, I will ask the Associate General Counsel, Mary Schwinn, to make some general announcements. Attorney Schwinn?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Yes, as the Chairman noted at the beginning of the meeting is being recorded in its entirety, so there's no need to ask specifically to have your matter recorded. Also, parties are limited to 10 minutes per side of legal argument, and I will keep track of that time. Thank you.
Thank you, Attorney Schwinn. All right, we'll start with FIC 2020-0270, Marlando Daly versus Armando Perez, Chief Police Department, City of Bridgeport. Are you there, Mr. Daly?
Yeah, I'm here.
Are you there, Attorney Scalo?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay. Attorney Scalo, would you like to begin?
Yes, please. I'll try to be brief. I understand that there's a lot of cases before you today. So essentially, the respondents respectfully disagree, not only with the ultimate conclusion of the hearing officer in this matter, but with the characterization of the proceedings and the communication between the parties. I think the factual circumstances surrounding this case are pretty critical to understanding the nature of Mr. Daly's request in the first place and the city's response to it, and then are furthermore critical to understanding the city's response to every subsequent change to the scope of the request that happened thereafter. So without going into the facts of the case in a really granular fashion, just from a top-down view, it's important to note that Mr. Daley's original request, the body of the request used a lot of language such as any and all documents with regard to general police practices or any and all documents with regard to standard police investigative procedures. So the original request that we received was not tailored or specific or clear, and in fact had some contradictory areas where, you know, certain areas of the request used this any and all language, but then other areas of the request would be specifically tailored to certain types of policies and protocols. So the respondents, not being really required to do so under the Act, engaged in negotiations and clarifications with Mr. Daley and his attorney to try to get a better understanding of what he was actually looking for, which is my understanding. The commission encourages those kinds of communications between, but does not mandate them under the Act. There's also commission precedent, which supports the finding that an agency isn't required to engage in any kind of negotiations or updates with respect to pending requests. But the respondents in this case elected to do so because, given the sort of broad nature of the request, Mr. Daley would probably be provided a lot of records that he wasn't really interested in, and then the city would have the additional burden of providing those records, which Mr. Daley probably didn't want. So at the first hearing, Mr. Daley communicated that he was only seeking a certain subset of policies, and the respondents agreed to engage with his attorney outside of the hearing process to point him in the direction of where those were publicly available on the City of Bridgeport website and really attempt to settle the matter. After that, between Mr. Daley's attorney and Mr. Daley, there was sort of a further moving of the goalposts where there was a clarification that Mr. Daley wasn't looking for policies that were currently in effect, but that he was looking for policies that were in effect at the time of his arrest, which to my recollection is about 10 years ago, which prompted a different scope of search and review. So essentially, the scope of the request had been changed by the end of the production of those records a number of times, and the city responded and conducted a search and eventually got Mr. Daley's attorney, the records that Mr. Daley was ultimately looking for. It appears as though the hearing officer did not really factor the additional delay that was contributed by the requester in this case and by engagements with his attorney that caused additional months of discussions and researches and further delays that ultimately led to the responsive records being provided. And it seemed to me that at the final hearing, one of the primary issues is that Mr. Daley hadn't been provided those records from his attorney rather than from the City of Bridgeport, which doesn't in and of itself ask for the commission or the hearing officer to consider a promptness violation. But in any event, given the backdrop of this request and those facts and circumstances, which had been documented with evidence, documentary and testimonial throughout this case, the hearing officer had a lot of evidence before him that would have supported a finding that not only the respondents didn't violate the promptness provisions of the FOI Act in terms of the facts and circumstances of this case, but rather engaged in a lot of actions that the FOI Act does not specifically mandate an agency to do. Additionally, there was further evidence discussing COVID limitations, I believe, and the fact that there had been a redrafting of policies. There was information before the hearing officer that these records were publicly available on the website, which I understand that Mr. Daley may not have access to, but his attorney would have had access to. So the cooperation needed from the requester is also an important factor to be taken into account in a case like this, where there's continual back and forth before, you know, records are ultimately provided. The system is working kind of in the way that it's supposed to. But in any event, the respondents would respectfully ask that the commission either vacate the proposed final decision in full or the finding that the respondents had violated the promptness provisions of the Freedom of Information Act. And given that, I think I have some additional time left, but I'm willing to answer any questions if members of the commission have them. Thank you very much.
Great. Mr. Daley?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, at this point, I don't have much to say. I last heard from my attorney, and he said he did get access to some of the stuff, but to be honest, they told me that I had a legal visit, so I thought I had a lawyer down here, so I have no paperwork in front of me to confirm basically what he received or not at this point. So.
Okay, thank you. I appreciate it.
No problem.
Do any of the commissioners have any questions of Mr. Daly or Attorney Scalo?
Mr. Chairman, just I think for just discussion, and maybe I will have a question for Attorney Scalo, but it seems that Attorney Scalo laid out some of the factors that may have been contributory and should have been considered under paragraph 17. But in paragraph 9, the finding about the at the first hearing in this matter, which was April 20th of 21, it was more than 10 months after the initial request. But in the light of what has been happening, especially in those 10 months between, you're talking June, I think it was the request was June here. But basically, June 2020 to April 2021, during the height of the pandemic, when we are taking up cases on this very docket that are like, low numbers in the 2020 era. I mean, so I'm thinking that there is, they may say in the years that I've been on, the first 9 years, when we have had items where it takes 10 months to get something, there is some consideration for the promptness that it sounds like they were working to get to some resolution and went above and beyond to try and to get something for the complainant. So I'm not so sure that they really did violate the promptness provision in this, and that maybe there's no order that should be given. But I'd like to hear what the other commissioners say. And maybe I will have a follow-up question for Commissioner Scalo.
This is Commissioner Hankins. I agree with Commissioner Streeter, particularly with paragraph 13. I don't know how long the complainant's attorney was keeping the records, and he still doesn't have the complainant still doesn't have the record, so I don't know what the complainant's attorney is doing. So I think it does mitigate a promptness kind of scenario.
Is Attorney Perlman there?
I mean, the hearing officer is Attorney Reed, Matthew Reed.
Excuse me.
I am here, but I wasn't the hearing officer.
Sorry. I'm sorry. I apologize.
It's okay.
I don't know if Attorney Schwind or anyone else can address that.
Yes, Mary Schwind here, Mr. Chairman. I trust the hearing officer to adduce the evidence that's presented before him. I understand what Commissioner Streeter is saying. Things are taking a lot longer, and they have been during the pandemic, but I would not recommend changing it at this point. Of course, it's up to the commission. It's your decision.
Mr. Chairman, this is Commissioner Chavez. I was looking at it a little bit differently, which is that the requests were for some very general policies, and it looks like it took a year for the city to show the complainant's attorney where those or at least where some of those policies could be found, because they had recently been uploaded to the website. And it seems like it was only that disclosure of where those policies could be found on the website that prompted the clarification that the complainant was only seeking policies from 2011. And so it does seem like there wasn't really much happening for a full year, and these were fairly basic policies. I understand Attorney Scalo's point that there was a broad description of the policies, but I would tend to honor the hearing officer's assessment of the evidence because he was closer to it and heard the witnesses. And there was a long period of time when it doesn't seem like anything was happening to get basic documents to the complainant.
Thank you. Do any of the other commissioners have any questions or comments?
Well, Mr. Chairman, Commissioner Streeter again, just to follow up, if items are on the website, it's not the respondent's responsibility to show them where that is. There's nothing in the FOI Act that says if it's already on the website that they have to basically spoon feed the complainant where it is. And so even if it takes a year, 2 years, 5 years, there's no penalty for that. It sounds like from what the testimony that was here, and I guess the question, I guess, is Attorney Scalo, is that was your opening statement to us presented at the hearing for the hearing officer? Because that was very compelling, and with the hearing officer not here to say, I'll put some weight on what you have to say on that.
Sure. This is Dina Scalo. It's a little bit difficult to go back and assess and try to remember what I said at both of the hearings, but my recollection is that these issues were brought up, that a lot of what this back and forth that had engaged between the parties is not required of a public agency or of the respondents in this case. I think to address Commissioner Chavez's question regarding the policies and where they could be found. My recollection is also that there was discussion on the record at one of the hearings, if not both, that the policies, there was an element of redrafting, and that may have contributed to when they were all put up on the website. But just to be clear, that evidence was before the hearing officer as well. But my statement to the commission is that I have great respect for the hearing officer, Attorney Reed, and I'm sure that, you know, while he weighed the evidence before him, and I'm sure he considered all of it, I don't think that the weighing of the evidence was consistent with the current climate in terms of COVID and consistent with the goals of the Freedom of Information Commission in terms of encouraging the parties to engage in a fashion and get the requester what they're really looking for. I would imagine that I made these points in terms of the amount of negotiations that took place between the parties at one or both of the hearings. And I imagine that the hearing officer had knowledge of those negotiations. But in terms of how he weighed them, I can't speak for Attorney Reed.
Thank you. Anyone else? Any of the other commissioners? All right. So I would entertain a motion on this matter.
Mr. Chairman, this is Commissioner Chavez. I'll move to adopt the hearing officer's report.
Thank you. Is there a second?
Attorney, Commissioner Einhorn, second.
Okay, motion's been made and seconded for discussion. Hearing none, I'll take a roll call of those in favor. Commissioner Chavez?
Yes.
Commissioner Einhorn?
Yes.
Commissioner Fuseschi?
Yes.
Commissioner Hankins?
No.
Commissioner Streeter?
No.
And Owen Egan, yes. It passes with two nay votes. Thank you. Next is docket number FIC 2021-0014, Samuel Davis versus Angel Queros, Commissioner, State of Connecticut, Department of Correction, et al. Are you there, Mr. Davis?
Yes, sir.
Are you there, Attorney McCurdy?
Yes.
Thank you. All right, Mr. Davis, would you like to begin, please?
Oh, like I had spoke on before, you know, all I'm asking for you to take the FOI out of DOC hands, because ever since they had it, they basically use safety security for everything that when you tries to put in something, and then when you put in for things that you got, you know, they wrote a report or something, they write a half one, and then they'll come back and lie and say safety security. I'm not saying that the facility I'm in, but when they forward it back to another facility and it's against their own officers, it's always a problem. It's always a problem when you get for FYI. Even if you pay for copies and stuff, you get them back and they missing, or they'll say, oh, we're nothing. Well, it doesn't go with it. And, it, you know, everything that they do, they lie around safety security. And back then in the 80s and then early 90s, when just FOI ran FOI, you had never had no problem. Since DOC got it, it's been nothing but problems. It's been nothing but problems with inmates getting what they're basically put in to get. Because then they'll come back and make an excuse. And there's no need for it. There's no need for it. We go through too many things. We got sentence. We in there for what we done. But now when they do something wrong, they use safety security not to give you what you're supposed to get that you put in for. All I'm asking for it to be tucking out of DOC and sit back to whoever had it first and was doing it right. Since DOC, when DOC get their hands on something, things never go right. It's always excuse, but the mainly thing is safety security. If you done something wrong or you fortified something, you should be able to answer for it. They shouldn't be able to use safety security, or it's not this, or they messed up on this or that, and now they tried to make me pay $18 for one page. For one page that I had already paid for, a whole thing, they sending things back and forth. They making it hard for us to even go through FOI. That's all I'm asking for somebody to take it out of DOC hand like it used to be and it was ran properly. Since DOC had it, FOI been a mess. It been a mess. You know, that's all I'm asking. That's all I'm looking for, and I'm asking for y'all to do, to think about it. Cause, you know, I'm officially, y'all done went through enough problems dealing with FOI. Thank you.
Thank you.
You hear me? But that's all I'm asking for you to take it out of the hand. That's all I'm asking. Because, you know, we go through too many problems with them, with DOC. They use it like when the police shoot somebody and they say and the dude was running a different way and everybody running a different way and they'll say, oh, I was scared for my life, so that's why I shot him. And the dude ran in the opposite way with his back turned. But this is what DOC is using FOI with. They use safety security for everything. When they don't want to give you something, or when they lie about something, I'm asking you, you know, it's no big thing that for somebody else to just do it, because if they policing themselves, nothing gonna go right. When you got somebody policing themselves over inmates, and when they know that they're wrong, they're gonna make the excuse of safety security.
Thank you.
We're not gonna get nothing. All right, that's all I'm asking.
Attorney McCurdy.
Yes, thank you. I move that the hearing officer's report be adopted. We did redact information based on safety and security. Mr. Davis was seeking records that have to do with an assault on an officer, and this commission has previously found that disclosure of injuries to staff is a legitimate safety and security concern to disclose those records. That's the case with a lot of the records of DOC that are requested. Also, the page 25 that he requested did not exist. It was just a misnumbering of the report, and that was in testimony at the hearing. Unless there's other questions, that's all I have.
Thank you. Commissioner, any questions?
Commissioner, can I say something before you even go there? She didn't tell you that the case got dismissed. She never told you nothing about the case got dismissed and they found out that the CO was lying. She never they don't tell you when they know they was wrong, they just use safety security. The case got dismissed. The CO what was into it, he's known for jumping on inmates or assaulting inmates and lying. He got over right now, I would say in federal court, over 30 lawsuits against him. Thank you.
Thank you. Do any of the commissioners have any questions? I have a question for Attorney Perlman. Are you there, Attorney Perlman?
I am. Thank
you. You heard Mr. Davis's comments. He's concerned that oftentimes the safety exception is initiated. In this case, how did it apply to the facts? What did this information, what did revealing this information do with regard to safety?
Well, based on the testimony that we received at the hearing, C.S. Campanelli had testified that this particular record provided details of an assault on staff, and it talked about like specific injury, and that how that would pose a safety and security risk. They would, based on this information, an inmate could potentially target the staff. And as Attorney McCurdy already stated, you know, the commission has found that the disclosure of a known injury or medical condition of a staff member could potentially be a safety and security risk. And as I'm sorry.
Why is that? I think I have my understanding of why, but could you please explain it?
Well, first, what we found, what they have stated in the past is that a known injury might make them more vulnerable to be targeted by an inmate.
Because they have an injury?
Because they have the injury. And that's the testimony based on our role when it comes to...
That they have the injury and that someone could attack them at the point of the injury? I'm not clear on that. How is it a safety risk?
Well, I think the question may be better directed to Attorney McCurdy, because if I may, Commissioner, our role when it comes to the safety and security determination is to determine whether their reasons are pretextual or not bona fide or irrational. And based on the testimony that received, I didn't feel that it was pretextual or irrational to believe that if a correctional officer incurred an injury, that an inmate could take advantage or the CO was more vulnerable and then it could pose a safety risk at that point.
Okay, and so they offered evidence of how that injury and disclosure of that specific injury would pose a safety risk.
What they offered is what I've outlined in the finding, paragraph 13, and then
okay.
I also based
it. Give any specifics. It just says injury occurred by a staff member, and that he testified that the disclosure of that information poses a safety and security concern, as inmates could potentially target staff members in their day-to-day duties. And I guess I would like more information, and they didn't give you any more information than that.
To my recollection, that was their testimony, and then also I believe the reference to the previous case where we did find that it would be a safety and security risk.
Right. Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Attorney McCurdy, was there evidence offered as to what that safety risk was?
I don't recall if the specific injury to this officer was discussed, but just that in general, we don't give any records of injuries of our staff to inmates because of the vulnerabilities that it exposes, as you said.
But tell me about the vulnerabilities. That's what I'm getting at.
Well, it's exactly that. If an officer has a physical vulnerability that makes them, you know, we don't want the inmates to know that because they will be targeted based on that vulnerability.
So if they've got a weak arm, they'll go after that weak arm, is what you're saying. Or if they've got a point where it hurts them, they'll go after that. Is that right?
Exactly.
Okay. That was my understanding. All right. Thank you. Are there any other questions?
Mr. Chairman, this is Commissioner Chavez. I think I might have two questions, but one is there was reference to a redacted document being provided, and I would like to know more about that. I'm not sure what the redactions were, what was provided and what wasn't provided.
So I guess Attorney Perlman.
Well, the two documents that were at issue were a page that were number 25 and a form that was CN-6603. As Attorney McCurdy stated earlier, that page number 25, it didn't exist. It was just a misnumbering. The CN-6603 was the document that was redacted or wasn't provided because on the grounds that it would be a safety and security risk.
Okay, I understand. And then I have a question for, this is Commissioner Chavez again, a question for Attorney McCurdy. And if I understand what you were saying about the vulnerability that may arise from disclosure of an officer, a correctional officer's injuries, but is there a time limit on that? So if somebody had a cut on their arm in November of 2020, wouldn't there be a point a year later that would no longer be a vulnerability if that's the point at which the records were being disclosed? Or is essentially your practice that any documentary reference to an injury would always become a safety risk and would never at any point in time be the subject of a disclosure under FOI?
No, I wouldn't say it goes that far. I mean, if it's a superficial or a skin wound that's going to heal and be fine in a period of weeks or months, then I don't think we would object to disclosure of that once it's healed. Some injuries may have lingering effects, like a joint injury, a knee or elbow, which, you know, could continue to be cause vulnerabilities for a long time. So I don't think there's any blanket prohibition on ever disclosing staff injuries. That's not our position.
Thank you. And then this is Commissioner Chavez. And I'm just wondering, did you hear any evidence about the long-standing nature of the injury or the more superficial nature or anything like that in this case, in the facts that you heard?
I apologize, Commissioner. It broke up a little bit. I didn't hear the full question.
Oh, I'm sorry. I was just wondering if in the evidence that you heard there was any indication of the, you know, whether it was a more superficial injury or something more systemic as an injury that was the subject of the redacted document.
To the best of my knowledge or that I remember from a hearing back in July, I don't believe there was, but I'd have to go back to the hearing.
And this is Attorney McCurdy. I'd also like to bring up the Connecticut General Statute Section 18-101F, which is the prohibition against disclosure of certain employee files to inmates under the Freedom of Information Act. There was a page that was initially withheld from inmate Davis, and then subsequently we provided a redacted copy of it to him with the photographic image redacted. But it was initially withheld under that 18-101F, and I think perhaps... And this actually may be a blanket prohibition for disclosing. Let me see.
Commissioner, this is Davis. Listen,
Please don't interrupt.
Was she?
Please okay. don't interrupt.
Okay, thank you.
So, yes, this statute provides a medical file concerning the current or former employee of the Department of Correction shall not be subject to disclosure under the Freedom of Information Act. Yeah, medical file or similar file. So that would, I would argue that would include a report concerning an assault on the staff and the injuries that the staff suffered.
So this is Commissioner Chavez. I just want to jump in again. It doesn't, Attorney Perlman, I don't think that was the basis on which you decided the case.
Correct. I don't believe that exemption, excuse me, or that statutory exception was raised at this hearing.
That's correct. It was in an exhibit in a letter that was submitted by, we submitted a letter by C.S. Campanelli. But at the hearing, we were relying on the safety and security exemption.
Do any of the other commissioners have any questions? Thank you. Yes?
This is Commissioner Fusashi. I have found this discussion important, but I note that what we're really discussing is the meaning of the commission hearing officer's determinations as to whether the commissioner's reasons were pretextual and not bona fide or irrational. So that's such a fact-intensive determination that, you know, I'm going to defer heavily to the hearing officer on that. But the overuse of that exemption by or the reliance on the safety issues by the Commissioner of Corrections does concern me. So in any case, I hope this discussion, whatever the result, will advance the thinking within the Department of Corrections about what this prisoner is asserting. That is, we are going to be more conscious in any case of overuse of this safety exemption and over-reliance on the fact of how we read pretextual or not bona fide or irrational. Those are strong words, but they're not absolute words in terms of being able to use that safety. So I believe the prisoner has made a important argument and brought important facts to our attention, and that this discussion has, at least for me, been very, very valuable.
Mr. Chairman, this is Commissioner Chavez.
Yes.
I just want to echo what Commissioner Fusashi said. I think that Mr. Davis has presented presented well an important issue for us to consider. But here, I view the commission, the Attorney Perlman's report as well founded. But nonetheless, I think that the what we see here at the commission as a very frequent invocation of the safety and security and exemption is something that we need to be careful about, and hopefully the Department of Correction will as well.
Thank you.
This is Attorney McCurdy.
Attorney McCurdy. Is there any other commissioner that would like to make a comment or would like to ask a question? Okay, thank you. Before you say anything, Attorney McCurdy, I believe Mr. Davis had something to say. Mr. Davis.
Yes, sir. Hey, sir, what I was trying to basically point out to you that, you know, when a CO makes a lie up and say that he got assaulted, then he retract the statement and say, well, no, he didn't get assaulted. He was it was attempted. After they look at the cameras and find out truly what happened. He could put down anything that he wanted. So when you go into court and you're trying to get certain things to show the judge, or even say if you bring it in for a lawsuit or whatever, you're trying to put everything together because you know that it was a lie and that he done retracted it. He wrote one thing and say, okay, he assaulted me, he hit me in the face, and I got this and that. And you come to find out that he didn't even go to the hospital. He never got hit. He never got touched. But they use safety security not to give you the right to that, to come to find out that this dude is a chronic liar, and then he don't think, which is true. A lot of inmates, they will go to AS, they'll put them in something hard to do, and they don't fight it. They don't go to trial. They'll just take the time and say, well, yeah, I take a year. In which they offer you a year running concurrent, in which on a peace officer, everything's supposed to be ran consecutive. But I went to court and I pushed for everything. And they had to end up dismissing the case because they come to find out that it's a lie. And then the dude changes report. And everybody in there, they're right. They wrote something what he told them. And they come to find out that it's a lie. Then when I asked for it, when I asked for all this and that, it's safety security. Why should you have safety security on a liar? A liar shouldn't have the right. I'm not asking for his address. I know his name. If I assaulted him and went to trial and went to court, I know his name. It's officer such and such. So why do they use safety security? If you're in here wounded and stuff and you ain't wounded, so what's safety security that you could injure, that something could use to be injured and he never got touched? This is what DOC is doing. When they do things, that they hide behind it. They hide behind it and use safety security. Hope that they could keep ignoring you until you just leave it alone. But then when I sent it to the commissioner, FOI, and then now it's a problem. Safety security. But that's what they're doing. They use safety
security. Mr. Chairman, Mr. Streeter, you know, he continues to go on. I think that, you know, his point has been made. I know we want Attorney McCurdy to speak too.
Okay,
so I want to go through the whole process again.
All right. Yeah. Thank you, okay. Sir.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Davis. Attorney McCurdy, briefly.
Thank you. I just want to strongly object to the characterization of our FOI services. We do not use safety and security as a shield for misdeeds of our officers. We disclose thousands of records. The ones we deny are legitimate, and we do not police ourselves. The appeals all go to FOI hearing officers, and they weigh the credibility. They look at the documents we withheld and the redactions. That's the function of this commission and the hearing officers. We don't police ourselves. Every appeal gets looked at, and the ones that come to this commission are the ones where documents have been withheld, but you don't get to see all the thousands of pages that we disclose.
Great.
Thank you.
Attorney McCurdy, just so we can clarify, if a person who was not an inmate asked for that same record, the safety and security risk exception could not be used. Isn't that correct?
I don't think so, because anything released potentially could be given to the inmates.
Oh, you don't believe it could be given to a third party, such as a non-lawyer who asked for that record?
I mean, I have to look at it on a case-by-case basis, but anything released, we assume, can get back inside to the inmates. So there was could be a safety risk.
Yeah, I think you need to do a little research on that. Anyway, all right.
Chairman, Commissioner Streeter?
Yes.
If I may. First and foremost, this is the law. This is, you know, safety and security is the law for Connecticut. I know that every case is on a case-by-case basis. I think, you know, Attorney Perlman has done a good job here. I think I'm a little cautious that the commission may be trying to weaken this by, you know, pulling back the reins. I think, you know, these are people that are incarcerated for a reason, and that the people that do the, you know, security officers there need to be fully backed by the laws of the state of Connecticut, which they are. And in this case, safety and security is, you know, I don't see this as something that is a, you know, a blanket that they're using all the time. But even if it were, it is something that's decided on a case by case basis. In this case, I think that this is a valid point. And the scales that were weighted by the hearing officer show that this is, you know, this in this matter, that, you know, it was used appropriately. And I think that, you know, for the commissioners to say that they're hoping that this may send a message back to DOC to not use this is overstretching our bounds. So I just wanted to put that on the record that in this case, based on, you know, obviously if other commissioners think that the hearing officer is erring in some way, but from what I've heard, you know, I support the hearing officer's report and I support the, you know, the safety and security law that's on the books.
Thank you. This is Commissioner Hankins. I would concur. I mean, what was requested was a summary of assault on the staff, you know, and, you know, I mean, I remember the movie, you know, where they say sweep the leg, you know, because they know there's a weakness. And I'm not being facetious. I'm saying that you know, if you know there's a weakness, you exploit the weakness. And that's why they don't permit that. And insofar as a outside, you know, a person that's not incarcerated getting some of these records, they don't do that either. I remember, for instance, like a video of the interior of secure areas, because they can share that with the population at large, who can then stitch together, you know, a whole scene of the inside, and then share it with people that are incarcerated. So, you know, it's a blanket. Neither the public nor the an incarcerated inmate get that. So, I mean, I agree with the hearing officer.
Thank you. Are there any other commissioners who have any questions? Hearing none, I'd entertain a motion.
Mr. Chairman, this is Commissioner Streeter. I move that we adopt the hearing officer's report.
Commissioner Hankins, second.
Motion's been made and second. Is there discussion? Hearing none, I'll take a roll call of those in favor. Commissioner Chavez?
Yes.
Commissioner Einhorn?
Yes.
Commissioner Fuzeschi?
Yes.
Mr. Hankins?
Yes.
Mr. Streeter?
Yes.
And Owen Egan, yes. Passes unanimously. Thank you, counsel. Thank you, Mr. Davis.
Goodbye, bye.
Right. Next is FIC 2020-0428, Vernon Leftridge Jr. versus Attorney General, State of Connecticut, Office of the Attorney General, et al. Are you there, Mr. Leftridge?
I am, sir. Thank you.
Okay. And are you there, Attorney Howard?
Yes, I am. Thank you.
Vernon Leftridge, would you like to begin, please?
Yes, Your Honor. May it please the Commission. My name is Vernon Leftridge. I had filed a request back in 2020 under the Freedom of Information Act requesting documents to be disclosed and information to be released. Going forward, there was an unnecessary delay in releasing those documents, as well as other information that were pertinent to my request under the FOI laws, which later a hearing was held. Hello, can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, sorry about that. Where a hearing was held and there was some orders made for documents to be provided to me, as well as released, including affidavit and other documents. Since then, those documents and materials requested under the FOI in 2020 have not been released to me, as well as the affidavit. In addition, the order that was ordered by the FOI hearing officer has not been followed, which I have received the email that the documents under this particular FOI hearing those documents have been destroyed. And because of that, in the moving of the goalposts and avoiding my honoring my FOI request, I move that the commission does not adopt the recommendation to dismiss, and that this is still put back on the FOI commission docket so that the FOI laws are enforced and that the documents requested can be released. But I would like to reserve my time for further discussion.
Thank you.
You're welcome, Your
Honor. Attorney Howard.
Thank you, Commissioner. The respondent in this case, very briefly, would move that the commission adopt the proposed order issued by the hearing officer in this case. Thank you.
Thank you. Do any of the commissioners have any questions or comments? Hearing none, I'll entertain a motion.
Mr. Chairman, Commissioner Streeter, I'll move adoption of the hearing officer's report.
Commissioner Hankins, second.
Motion's been made and seconded. Is there discussion?
Yes.
Hearing none, I'll take a roll call of those in favor. Commissioner Chavez?
Yes.
Commissioner Einhorn?
Yes.
Commissioner Fizeshi?
Yes.
Commissioner Hankins? Mr. Hankins?
Yes. Yes.
Streeter?
Yes.
And myself, Owen Egan, yes. Passes unanimously. Thank you, Mr. Lethbridge. Thank you, Attorney Howard.
So that being that the minutes that are reserved, can I be heard on the discuss?
I'm sorry. You had something else to say?
Yes, I did. I wanted to reserve after hearing from the state's position.
The state just asked us to adopt the hearing officer's report. Didn't have any argument or anything else.
Oh, yes. No, I had reserved my time where I wanted to continue. I didn't know we was going to move right into.
I apologize. Attorney Schwinn?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, if you did wish to hear a further argument from the complainant, I think you would need a vote to reopen.
All right.
And go from there.
I'd entertain a motion to reopen so that we can hear from Mr. Lethbridge.
Would it be a vote to reopen or reconsider?
I believe reopen, Commissioner Streeter, because there's no final decision issued yet. So I think it would be a reopen. Thank you.
Okay. Well, then, Mr. Chairman, I'll move that we reopen the hearing to hear from the complainant.
Thank you. Is there a second?
This is Commissioner Hankins. I'll second it.
Is there discussion on the motion to reopen? Hearing none, I'll take a roll call of those in favor of reopening. Commissioner Chavez?
Yes.
Mr. Einhorn?
Yes.
Mr. Fizeshi?
Yes.
Mr. Hankins?
Yes.
Mr. Streeter?
Yes.
And Owen Egan, yes. All right, Mr. Lethbridge, I'm sorry about that. Continue, please.
Okay, so my apology for any confusion, Your Honor. And let me just get right into the meat. The hearing officer had issued an order for the Attorney General's office to release some documents to me. That order wasn't followed. And that order was very specific to the AG's office. Because those documents have not been, the documents have not been released to me and the order has not been followed, I don't believe that the finding should be adopted until there's compliance to the order that was issued by the hearing officer. Any closure of that would block me from getting those documents, would create a precedent that I think would be unfair to going forward for all
citizens trying to ascertain records under the FOI Act. I do not fully agree with the recommendation at this time because there are still outstanding orders that have not been complied to. And because these orders were issued for the AG's office to comply to, I don't believe and feel that it should be adopted at this time. I believe that it should be set aside until the order has been closed and that the documents have been turned over and that the FOI order, hearing officer's order, is followed. Once that's followed, then I believe it would be in the best interest of all parties that if we have to come back before you all when there's compliance, then it could probably, you know, go forward from there. But until that order is fulfilled and compliance to that order, FOI order, is fulfilled, it should not be closed. It would be unfair for me, towards me, and bias for me if I'm not provided with documents under the FOI law. And to get an email from the AG's office that documents have been destroyed, I think there needs to be a discussion why public documents upon a person's request are being destroyed. And that's also unfair because the FOIA is designed to keep public agencies honest. And I have a right to those documents, and they have to be honest about those documents. And any delays that were caused from disclosing requested documents, they should have been disclosed pursuant to the FOI laws of Connecticut, not 2 years later, and which still haven't been. It's 2022, and I filed this in 2020. I have no further argument, Your Honor.
Mr. Chairman, Commissioner Streeter, I move adoption of the hearing officer's report.
Is there a second?
Commissioner Hankins, second.
Is there any discussion? All right, hearing none, I'll take a roll call of those in favor of adoption. Commissioner Chavez?
Yes.
Einhorn?
Yes.
Mr. Fuzeci?
Yes.
Mr. Hankins?
Yes.
Mr. Streeter?
Yes.
And Owen Egan? Yes. Passes unanimously. Thank you, sir. Thank you, Attorney. All right.
Thank you.
Next is docket number FIC 2020-0446, Timothy Leonard, Office of the City Attorney, City of Bridgeport, et al. Leonard. Mr. Leonard, are you there? Thank you. Council, are you there for the City of Bridgeport? Attorney Scalo?
Yes, this is Dina Scalo for the City of Bridgeport, or for the respondents. I'm present.
Okay. Doesn't sound like Mr. Leonard is there, so would you like to begin, please?
Yes, please. Again, I'll be brief. So essentially, the respondents ultimately don't object to the orders of disclosure that are at the end of the proposed final decision in this matter. But I think there are a few notes that require some additional discussion or clarification or amendment before the hearing officer's report is adopted. The first issue concerns the complainant's request for personnel files, and this is discussed a bit, I think, on page 6 of the proposed final decision. Essentially, the complainant sought a personnel file pertaining to an officer within the Bridgeport Police Department. And it turned out, after some discussion with the complainant myself, to my recollection, rather soon before the second hearing in this matter, the complainant informed counsel that he was seeking a training file, which is maintained by the Training Academy for the police, rather than the personnel file. I'm sorry. I got some feedback. Did everyone hear me?
Yes.
Okay, great. Sorry. I'll continue. So this is a fairly important distinction in terms of the analysis of disclosure of the records that were requested. And it seems as though this isn't really highlighted in the proposed final decision as it's currently written. First of all, this clarification made by the complainant a little bit before the second hearing of the matter, it was again, as we discussed earlier today in a different matter, the result of some negotiation and discussion between counsel and the complainant, which again is not required under the Freedom of Information Act. It was done, you know, in an attempt to, number one, settle this current matter, but also to get a better understanding of the records that were in fact requested. On top of that, it's important in terms of the analysis of the search that was conducted and the records that were provided and the testimony that was provided in the first hearing. As we presented testimony to the effect of in the second hearing, it's an important distinction that the complainant requested a personnel file rather than a training file. There are two separate and distinct categories of records. The respondents acknowledge that a training file could be considered a personnel file for purposes of complying with the notification requirements of the Freedom of Information Act, but practically speaking, in terms of tailoring your request for what you're looking for, requesting a training file, which details training at a police academy, is a different type of request than requesting employment and personnel materials, which could contain a myriad of different types of records. So the fact that the complainant didn't provide this clarification to the respondent until long into the process is important in terms of the commission's analysis of the facts of this case, specifically with respect to promptness. Again, the respondents did not say that they, you know, wouldn't undertake a search for the training file and, in fact, did locate it and engaged in discussions with the complainant that would, you know, he wouldn't need to file a separate request, you know, just based on our discussions, we would be able to conduct a search and get those non-exempt materials to him. But in terms of analysis of the promptness factors in Advisory Opinion 51, the time frame that when that clarification made it to the respondents is important to note, and I don't think is really laid out clearly in the proposed final decision as it's currently written. And coupled with testimony from the complainant himself, primarily in the first hearing, where he spoke a bit, to my recollection, about the fact that there wasn't really any communication prior to filing the complaint, about the urgency by which he needed the records, about the fact that he didn't really convey to the respondents how important the records were to him. I think those are other factors that are critical in the promptness analysis. So with other matters discussed today, as I mentioned before, the respondents would just ask that there be a recognition of the handling of the complainant's request in terms of engaging in these discussions with the complainant in order to produce what he was actually asking for and gain a better understanding so as to reach a resolution, because often these negotiations are helpful in gaining clarity in terms of the scope of the request. This was one of three requests at issue in this matter. And it's important to note that just given the volume of requests that are received by the city of Bridgeport, and I'm sure by other agencies as well, it's not really possible to kind of engage in this in-depth analysis and negotiation with each and every requester. And so the fact that that was done, it's in the context of negotiations with respect to the request, I think that's an important note. Again, it's not required by the Freedom of Information Act. We're not really required to kind of engage in a fact-finding mission to try to figure out what records are being requested. So I think that's an important factual component to this matter that isn't really touched on. With respect to the orders at the end of the proposed final decision, again, the respondents don't really object to the disclosure order, specifically of the personnel file with certain redactions, nor is there an objection to providing additional evidence with respect to another search, although I think that there was information presented at the second hearing with regard to the scope of the search and where the requested records that the complainant was looking for would be housed. But I think that with respect to the training order, there's some additional points that I'd like to make. Ideally, the respondents would ask that the training requirement be removed from the final decision if it's adopted. But should the commission elect to order training for the respondents, I would ask just that this order be clarified a bit. The respondents in this matter are the Office of the City Attorney and the City of Bridgeport. The records that were requested were primarily, I guess, the request was really directed to the Bridgeport Police Department, and that's where such records are maintained. But the City of Bridgeport itself has close to 30 liaisons within different departments that are tasked with processing requests. And often requests and the way that they are processed involve pulling in individuals who are not liaisons, strictly speaking, who it's not their primary duty to process FOI requests, but they're usually pulled in to assist with a search or assist with some kind of processing in that regard. And that's what happened in this case. So the respondents would just recommend that this training portion just be clarified or amended to be training for really just the individuals that were involved with the processing of this particular request rather than making it kind of an open-ended training requirement. And I think that's about it in terms of my thoughts for this proposed final decision. If any of the commissioners have any questions, I'd be happy to answer them. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Do any of the commissioners have any questions for Attorney Scalo? Hearing none, I'll entertain a motion.
Mr. Chairman, Commissioner Streeter, I'll move adoption of the hearing officer's report.
Thank you. Is there a second?
This is Commissioner Hankins, second.
Motion's been made and seconded. Is there any discussion? Hearing none, I'll take a roll call of those in favor. Commissioner Chavez?
Yes.
Mr. Einhorn?
Yes.
Mr. Fuzeshi?
Yes.
Mr. Hankins?
Yes.
Mr. Streeter?
Yes.
Mr. Streeter?
Yes, please.
Thank you. And Owen Egan, yes. Passes unanimously. Thank you, Attorney Scalo.
Thank you.
Next, we have docket number FIC 2020-0583, Sean Murphy versus First Selectman, Town of North Stonington. Are you there, Attorney Keppel?
I am. Thank you, Commissioner.
There, Mr. Murphy.
Pardon? This is Sean Murphy.
Are you there, Mr. Murphy?
Yes.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Murphy, would you like to begin, please?
Yes. First, thank you, Commissioners, for allowing me to offer oral argument concerning the proposed finding and order. My appeal had three complaints in it that there was a failure to notice a Board of Selectmen, a special Board of Selectmen meeting, a failure to provide minutes of that special Board of Education, Board of Selectmen meeting, and the failure to provide a copy of the invitation. The first two allegations in my appeal are based on my interpretation. I base that on my interpretation of the definition of a meeting within Connecticut General Statute. The hearing officer concluded that in paragraph 13 that there was no meeting. And I respectfully disagree with this conclusion and ask the commission to reconsider this in their final decision. I believe undisputed is the fact that all three selectmen of a three-member Board of Selectmen were invited to and attended a gathering in order to facilitate discussion among the many participants. And that's a quote taken from the paragraph 10, in order to facilitate discussion among the many participants. Also, I believe undisputed is the fact that the discussions were concerning matters which the selectmen have supervision, control, jurisdiction, and or advisory power. I believe that's undisputed because the selectmen acknowledged in an email replying to me that one of the topics that I was concerned about, sewer and water issues, was indeed included in the meeting, and those they do have control or jurisdiction over. I believe that the hearing officer came to her conclusion based on the testimony of the selectmen during the hearing, that saying that they did not contribute to discussions during the gathering. I argue that the third aspect of the definition for meeting contained in the statute, and this is in paragraph 9 of the findings, and it states, any communication by or to a quorum of a multi-member public agency. And I would emphasize the to as being applicable in this case. I believe that the discussions by those present at this gathering being heard by each of the selectmen is indeed communication to the entire Board of Selectmen. I therefore believe that this gathering meets the definition of a meeting of the Board of Selectmen and therefore should have been properly noticed and meeting minutes taken. The third allegation in my appeal was a failure to provide me a copy of the meeting invitation. Although I received an email message from the first selectman containing, and I quote from the hearing officer's report in paragraph 6, it contained substantive text of the meeting invitation on November 3rd, 2020. I did not receive the actual meeting invitation that I requested until a day or two prior to the hearing held on October 22nd, 2021, almost a year later. It was not until this later date that I was able to determine for certain who the invitation was sent out to. The email that was sent to me prior to this was strictly typed in a new email from the first selectman to myself, possibly cutting and pasting particular information into it. It was not the actual invitation that I requested. The proposed final decision, paragraph 7, states that I requested that this commission impose civil penalties against the respondents. My actual request was for the first selectman to be imposed a civil penalty. And the reason for this is because the first selectman was indeed the meeting organizer, and he has previously violated the FOI Act as documented in FIC 2018 TAC 0214. At the time, the commission declined to consider the imposition of civil penalties because he was new to the job and indicated that henceforth he would follow the commission's guidance. Also, it should be noted that the first selectman has attended FOI training sessions on February 20th of 2018 and January 13th, 2020. I respectfully thank the commission for your time and consideration and would be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Murphy. Attorney Keppel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to note for the record that Robert Carlson, the current first selectman of the town of North Darlington, is, I believe, participating in the, listening in on the hearing, but is not going to participate verbally.
Thank you.
So the town of North Darlington would respectfully request that the commission adopt the hearing officer's recommended decision based on the we concur with her analysis of the law. Mr. Murphy's, the arguments he just laid out were the same arguments he put forth at the hearing, and we concur with hearing officer Ross's decision, Attorney Ross's decision, that this gathering did not constitute a meeting, essentially because testimony was provided at the FOI hearing that there was no discussion among the members of the Board of Selectmen who were at this gathering, nor was there any decision made by the agency known as the North Stonington Board of Selectmen at this gathering. So there was no discussion, no action taking, which is in the statute, it describes the meeting as, with various language beforehand, to discuss or act upon a matter over which the public agency has supervision, obviously an excerpt. But since there was, the town's position essentially is that since there was no discussion and no action taken, it was not a meeting, and therefore any alleged failure to provide any documents, even though the town did provide substantial amounts of information about the gathering promptly, it wasn't required to do so because it wasn't a meeting under the law. So we would ask that the hearing officer's recommended decision be adopted by the full commission.
Thank you. This is Sean Murphy. Can I add a rebuttal to those comments?
Sure.
Once again, the statute states that it includes any communications by or to a quorum. And I would argue that the discussions by everyone at the meeting, and this meeting was attended by various boards and commission members, their discussions was indeed communication to a quorum of a multi-member public agency, the Board of Selectmen. So I think the statute's clear that it doesn't necessarily mean that the two of the selectmen that testified they didn't say anything. That doesn't mean that because they testified they didn't have to say anything at the meeting, that it's no longer a meeting. I think the statute's clear. It says it includes any communication by or to the quorum. Thank you.
If I may, Mr. Chair, if I may have similar rights to briefly rebut Mr. Murphy's analysis. Under his analysis, if two or three members of the North Stonington Board of Selectmen attended a North Stonington Board of Finance meeting, which has happened on a regular basis and over the years, that would be automatically considered a meeting under Mr. Murphy's theory of the Board of Selectmen, just because there was communication about town business that was heard by members of the Board of Selectmen. The hearing officers and our reading of the statute is that the reference to meeting as being a hearing or other proceeding of a public agency to discuss and act upon a matter is discussions and actions by the public agency. So since there was no such communication or discussion, it was correctly determined by Attorney Ross as to not be a meeting, and we would again request that position be adopted by the full commission.
Sean Murphy, if I may add a comment.
Sure.
What Attorney Keppel has described about attending more than a quorum of one or more than two, basically a quorum of the Board of Selectmen members attending a Board of Finance meeting, that would indeed be as long as they're not discussing among themselves a chance gathering where they happen to show up at the meeting. That is quite different than the example, this example, and in this example, they were both invited to and both attended. So this isn't a chance meeting that in the example that Mr. Keppel laid out, and I don't think it could be used. It's fair to use that in comparison. Thank you.
Thank you. Attorney Ross? Is Attorney Ross there?
Yes, I am here, Mr. Chairman.
Can you comment on that debate?
Yes. I think the commission's precedent over the years and what we advise members of public agencies is that if they are going to be together in the same space, they should refrain from discussing any matter over which the agency has jurisdiction. And in this case, this is what happened. All three members of this particular board were present in the same location, but the evidence was clear that there was no discussion among these board members of any matter over which they had jurisdiction. So I think it's pretty clear that it was not a meeting as that's been defined by the commission.
How about Mr. Murphy's comment about the fact that they were invited to this meeting?
I don't think that distinction is relevant in any way. I think the chance meeting provision that Mr. Murphy references is just a different non-meeting scenario under the FOI Act. The fact that they come because they plan to come to the same location or whether it was a chance meeting, it doesn't matter legally, is really the key factor when you're determining whether there was a meeting is whether – not whether they were present physically in the same space, but whether they had discussions over a matter over which the board has jurisdiction.
Thank you.
Sean Murphy.
Mr. Murphy, one second. I'm going to let the commissioners ask questions. I'll come back to you. Do any of the other commissioners have questions?
Mr. Chairman, I don't know if we need to hear from Mr. Murphy. No questions were addressed to him. I don't think he should be rebutting the hearing officer.
Anything further? All right. Mr. Murphy, I will let you speak. Go ahead. Please be brief.
The hearing officer mentioned that the Board of Selectmen members did not have discussions amongst themselves. And I don't see that as a requirement in the definition of a meeting. They were definitely present and they listened to the communication of the rest of the folks at the meeting. The statute doesn't specify that it has to be those particular members, the Board of Selectmen meeting members that had the discussion. So they were present. They listened to those others present, and they were a quorum.
Thank you. All right.
Thank
any you. Of the other commissioners have any questions or comments? Hearing none, I'd entertain a motion.
Mr. Chairman, this is Commissioner Streeter. I'll move adoption of the hearing officer's report.
Commissioner Hankins, second.
Motion's been made and seconded. Is there discussion? Hearing none. Roll call of those in favor. Commissioner Chavez?
Yes.
Mr. Einhorn?
Yes.
Mr. Fizeshi?
Yes.
Mr. Hankins?
Yes.
Mr. Streeter?
Yes.
And Owen Egan, yes. Thank you, Mr. Murphy. Thank you, Attorney Keppel.
Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioners, Chair. Appreciate your time.
Thank you. Next, we go to docket number FIC 2020-0647, Ethan Book. This is Republican Registrar of Voters, City of Bridgeport et al. Are you there, Mr. Book? Are you there, Attorney Scalo?
Good afternoon again. Yes, this is Attorney Scalo. I'm present.
Thank you. Would you like to begin, Attorney Scalo? Please.
Yes, please. Again, I'll try to be brief. So with respect to this matter, again, the respondents don't take issue particularly with the order to disclose the records that Mr. Book requested in this case, provided they be redacted. I will discuss the disclosure order in a moment, but the respondents do take some issue with the characterization of the evidence that was before the hearing officer, specifically with respect to factors that may have contributed in the delay in providing the requested records. I'm sorry, I heard a delay there. So specifically in the paragraph 25-26 area of the proposed final decision, there's language that suggests that there was no evidence presented that demonstrated why there might have been a delay in providing the records that were requested to the complainant in this case. Respectfully, we would disagree with that characterization. There was extensive testimony at the hearing in this matter from a couple witnesses from the registrar's office in the city of Bridgeport. And to my recollection, there was testimonial evidence presented at the hearing from witnesses, specifically with respect to the volume of the requested records. And to my recollection, it was some time ago, the testimony was that it would be fair to characterize the volume of records that were requested as hundreds, if not thousands, of pages of Canvas reports. So again, these are the factors that indeed are pivotal among the factors that are to be considered in advisory opinion number 51 when an analysis of whether prompt disclosure was made or not in response to a request. One of the first ones that's listed, as I recall, is the volume of records that are requested. So there was evidence that was presented on the record to the hearing officer specifically regarding the volume of records that were requested. And then, you know, again, there were representations by counsel, by myself, about the process by which we process requests and that requested records are reviewed by the Office of the City Attorney before they're disclosed. And given that I conduct the review generally, I can't provide any testimony as to that fact, but there was additional testimony on the record from the witnesses present and discussion with the hearing officer regarding confidentiality requirements from, I believe it's Connecticut General Statute Section 54-240, which deals with the address confidentiality program as it applies to voting records. So, again, there is evidence in the record that describes the nature of the review and the statutory authority of that review. So coupled with these confidentiality provisions, which are recognized in the order at the conclusion of the proposed final decision, with the volume of records that were requested, I think there's a fair basis for the hearing officer to find that while there was a delay, and the respondents absolutely recognized that there was a delay, coupled with the testimony from the witnesses on the issue of access to the building and other matters that were present, the volume of records and the review of those records, I believe that there's evidence before the hearing officer that warranted, while there was a delay in the providing of records, that delay wasn't necessarily unwarranted under the Freedom of Information Act, given the facts and circumstances. So again, you know, respectfully, the respondents did provide evidence and an explanation regarding the delay in providing responsive records to the complainant and indeed committed on the record, I believe, at the hearing and indeed commit now to providing the requested records as redacted, as noted in the order. But there is a disconnect between the evidence that was presented and the findings that were made. Finally, just again, due to the volume of the requested records and balancing the handling of other matters by counsel, including other Freedom of Information requests, we would ask that should the order for disclosure stand, that the deadline for disclosure be increased to 2 weeks instead of 7 days from the date of the notice of final decision so that we can ensure that we meet that deadline. But again, other than that, short of the commission withdrawing or reversing the proposed final decision as a whole, we would ask that if everything else remains intact, that again, that deadline for disclosure be increased to 2 weeks just to ensure that we have enough time so that we are in compliance with that order. So again, thank you very much for your time today. And if there are any questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
Thank you. Do any of the commissioners have any questions for Attorney Scalo?
Mr. Chairman, Commissioner Streeter?
Yes.
I have actually a question of Assistant General Counsel Mary Schwind. Attorney Schwind, seeing that the complainant is not here today, typically, you know, is it 1 week just, you know, arbitrary, or is it okay to go to 2 weeks here if, you know, he's not here to object to that?
Thank you, Commissioner Streeter. It's certainly within the commission's discretion to change it to 14 days. I can't speak to why Attorney Reed chose 7 days, but it's certainly, if you wanted to amend it to 14 days at this point, that's certainly within your discretion.
I just don't see any harm in going to 14 days. If the rest of the commission, I'll step aside and see if anybody else has anything. And if not, then I'll make a motion to amend.
This is Commissioner Hankins. I think 14 days is a modest request. You know, considering that, what is it, under the UAPA, you have 45 days within which to appeal. So I mean, you know, I don't know. I'd do 14 or 21 even. I mean, you know, this Bridgeport, what, had 5 cases on today? I don't know if that's a record, but it's pretty close. So, I mean, I think they have their hands full. So, I mean, unless there's a strong objection, I'd say 21 days, given the 45 days to appeal under the UAPA even.
So are you saying not 14 days, but 21 days? Am I misunderstanding?
Well, no, this is Commissioner Hankins. I'd say 21, just given the fact that they have 45 days within which to appeal. So they don't have to do anything, you know? If they're not going to appeal, they can wait 45 days and then just fork it over. So what I'm saying is they've had, well, I think, 5 cases on today. So I think they have their hands full. I mean, if they think they can do it in 2 weeks, fine then, you know?
I'm sure they would appreciate the additional time. So I agree with Commissioner Hankins.
Okay.
Does anyone else wish to speak?
It's Commissioner Fusashi. I have a question, and unfortunately, Attorney Reed is not here to answer. I am not sure what paragraphs 25 and 26 add to this order. I would leave 27, but I think it's important to encourage. I just don't keep it. I'm not sure what paragraphs 25 and 26 add to the order. And I would be open, if other commissioners were open to it, to at the same time we make the extension of the time period, to eliminate paragraphs 25 and 26.
Attorney Schwind, if we eliminate those two paragraphs, does that harm the decision?
Mary Schwind here. No, I don't think it would change the substance of the decision and the conclusion that was reached. So I think that could be done, yes.
Okay, thank you. All right, are there any other commissioners who wish to be heard?
Mr. Commissioner, I would then like to make a motion that we amend this the hearing officer's report by eliminating paragraphs 25 and 26, renumbering the paragraphs thereafter, and changing 7 days to 21, up to 14 days in the paragraph one of the order.
14 or 21?
I'm open to further discussion. It could be, if others would prefer 21, I don't have a strong feeling.
Commissioner Hankins, I'd say 21.
All right, let's go 21. So, let's make it 21. Eliminate paragraph 25, 26, renumber thereafter, and change 7 days to 21 days in paragraph one of the order. That would be the motion.
Thank you. Is there a second?
I'll second that. Commissioner Streeter.
Mr. Streeter, second that. Is there discussion? All right. I'll take a roll call on those in favor of the amendment by Commissioner Fusashi. Commissioner Chabé?
Yes.
Commissioner Einhorn?
Yes.
Commissioner Fusashi?
Yes.
Commissioner Hankins?
Yes.
Mr. Streeter?
Yes. Yes.
And Owen Egan? Yes. Yes. So the amendment passes unanimously. Is there a motion on the matter as amended?
Mr. Chairman, Commissioner Streeter, I'll move the amended hearing officer's report.
Commissioner Hankins, second.
Motion's been made and seconded. Is there discussion? entertain roll call in favor. Commissioner Chavez?
Yes.
Mr. Einhorn?
Yes.
Commissioner Fuzeci?
Yes.
Commissioner Hankins?
Yes.
Mr. Streeter?
Yes.
And Owen Egan, yes. Passes unanimously. Thank you, Attorney Scalo.
Thank you very much. That's it for me. So
that was a long day.
That was. Take care, everybody.
Attorney Schwinn.
Yes, Mr. Chairman. I think the other matters have been voted on, so that the next matter on the commission's agenda is number 3, consideration of petition for reconsideration of final decision in docket number FIC 2020-0241, Ethan Book versus Christopher Rosario, state representative, state of Connecticut, and state of Connecticut General Assembly. This was a petition filed by Mr. Book regarding the underlying matter under the UAPA. He's asking for reconsideration. The matter is not arguable before the commission. It's specifically brought under Section 4-181A, subparagraph A1, and the grounds for reconsideration would be a showing of an error of fact or law that should be corrected, new evidence that's been discovered, which materially affects the merits of the case and which for good reasons was not presented at the agency proceeding, or other good reason for consideration has been shown. And just very briefly, in the underlying matter, 2020-0241, the commission found that all requested records had been provided to Mr. Book, and the commission also concluded, based on the facts and circumstances of that case, that the respondents were prompt. The complainant is now seeking a reversal of the final decision and civil penalties against the respondent, but in his petition, he simply cites to the underlying record that was already before the commission at the time of the final decision and offers no new evidence which is would materially affect the case, simply some facts or information regarding the personal life and the family members of the respondent. So I would recommend that the commission deny the petition for reconsideration. Doesn't meet the standard of the statute.
Thank you.
So,
I entertain a motion.
Mr. Chairman, Commissioner Streeter, I move that we deny the petition for reconsideration in docket 2020-0241.
Commissioner Hankins, second.
Thank you. Motion's been made and seconded. Is there discussion? Hearing none. All those in favor, I'll take a roll call. Commissioner Chavez?
Yes.
Einhorn?
Yes.
Mr. Fuzeci?
Yes.
Mr. Hankins?
Yes.
Mr. Streeter?
Yes.
And Commissioner and Owen Egan, yes. Passes unanimously. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. And the next matter, Mr. Chairman, on the agenda is another decision as to whether to reconsider final decisions. But it comes from another provision of the UAPA, specifically pursuant to 4181A, subparagraph A, subparagraph 2. The commission, regardless of whether a petition has been filed, can, within 40 days of the mailing of the previous final decision, on its own, may decide to reconsider a final decision. And here we're just putting before the commission two possible matters to reconsider. The final decisions in those matters, which are docket number FIC 2020-0122, Energy Policy Advocates versus the Attorney General of Connecticut, and also FIC docket number 2020-0320, also Energy Policy Advocates against the Attorney General, State of Connecticut. The parties in those two cases, which were decided in January, are identical to the parties in another matter which I'm sure you all remember, docket number 2020-0267, which was considered by the commission at its meeting of February 23rd, 2022. Not only are the parties the same, but many of the issues and legal arguments in all three matters mirror each other. I'm sure you recall that the commission did not adopt that matter in February 2020-0267, but rather you unanimously voted to remand that matter back to staff for further consideration of the legal arguments presented by the parties regarding the attorney work product doctrine and the common legal interest privilege. As you are within the time frame, which is authorized by the UAPA, we wanted to place these items before you so that you may decide, if you wish, to reconsider those earlier final decisions and similarly remand them back to the staff for further consideration of the legal arguments that were presented by the parties in those matters.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, Commissioner Streeter, I think that, I would be in favor of remanding these back. I think that, we understand that there were some possibly chilling effects when dealing with the ombudsman process that came up in the last meeting. So I'd like to move that we remand these two cases so that all three can be considered by staff at the same time.
I'd like to second that. This is Commissioner Fuseschi.
Motion's been made and seconded. Is there discussion?
This is Commissioner Hankins. I would concur just that we, have a uniformity of decisions, mm-hmm. not some, crazy quote. So, yeah, I would go along with all that.
Thank you. I agree. Is there any other discussion? Hearing none, I'll take a roll call of those in favor. Commissioner Chavez?
Yes.
Mr. Einhorn? Commissioner Einhorn?
Oh, he's muted.
Yes.
Sorry. Thank you. Mr. Fuseschi?
Yes.
Mr. Hankins?
Yes.
Mr. Streeter?
Yes.
And Owen Egan, yes. Passes unanimously. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The next matter on the commission's agenda is consideration of the Superior Court decision in Ian Cook versus the Freedom of Information Commission, and I'm going to ask Attorney Ross to please report on that decision.
Hi again. I reported on this briefly last meeting when I think the decision had come out that morning, but by now you've all had a chance to read it, and you can see that the issue before the court was very simple. This commission ruled that the provision in 1-210A regarding the inspection rights was limited to, so the right to inspect records requires that a person be, or to physically present themselves at the public agency's principal place of business, essentially. So that was the ruling in the commission's decision, and the judge upheld that interpretation.
Great.
Thank you. Thank you, Kathleen.
You're welcome.
Okay. Next matter on the agenda, Mr. Chairman, is the executive director's report. I'll be very brief. The hour is late. Just like the commission to know that we're continuing to work towards hopefully holding meetings and hearings in person at some point, depending on how the pandemic is going. As I mentioned just prior to the meeting to Commissioner Einhorn, things are changing here. They've removed the mask mandate for this building that we're in. So we're trying to keep up with the times and working towards that. Under staff reports, I would just like to report that the Wendy's position, we've received many applications on that, and the time period for applying for that just closed last night. So we're looking forward to going through those applications and hopefully finding a great candidate for our paralegal position. And we have received, just this week, we received authorization to post the staff attorney 2 position but was vacated by Attorney Reed. So that position should go up on the State of Connecticut website tomorrow or Friday. So we're looking forward to receiving applications on that. Finally, I'm going to ask Paula, if she's there, to give just a brief legislative report. Things are hopping over there at the legislature. Paula?
Yes. Hello again. Just so briefly, we continue to monitor the bills and prepare statements on those that are being heard before the various committees. Mary is scheduled to testify this Friday before the Government Administration Elections Committee regarding a proposal to add employees of the Attorney General's office to the list or the category of employees outlined in 1-217 that allows for the redaction of the residential address of certain delineated employees, public employees. So she'll be doing that on Friday. We are still waiting to see if the commission's proposals are released. We have reason to believe that they will be raised by the Government Administration Elections Committee, but we haven't seen them yet. And so I'll keep you posted on that. And then lastly, I just wanted to draw your attention to an interesting proposal that we're monitoring. It's not so much that it could impact FOI. There's a proposal out there that would require public agencies to allow public comment. So right now under FOI, agencies are not required to allow members of the public to testify. It's really up to that particular agency or board. But interesting enough, there's a proposal this year that would require the agency to allow public comment. So that would mean we would also have to allow members of the public to comment at all our meetings. I just thought I'd draw your attention to that. So for now, we're going to remain silent on that one. It's being heard today. And we'll see where it goes.
So you never know. Yeah.
So Paula, if they're allowed to comment, for instance, at our meetings, when would they be commenting?
The proposal right now, it's very general. It just says that an agency has to allow public comment. I guess it would be up to the agency to decide whether it's at the beginning, at the end, after every case. I don't have any more specifics than what the language allows. And I haven't seen any statements in response to posted on the website, on the General Assembly website. So I don't have any more information than that it's going to require public comment.
Okay.
Or it would require public comment.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Paula.
Mr. Chairman, this is Commissioner Streeter. Can I just just following up on that? I would urge that the chairman put that on the bottom of the agenda, so they'd have to sit through 2 hours before they can get their public comment. And just my two cents.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. That's all I had for today.
Okay. Well, everybody did a great job. Thank you.
I move we adjourn.
Is there a second?
I'll second it. This is Commissioner
Chavez. Okay, Commissioner Streeter and Commissioner Chavez, we'll take a roll call of those in favor of adjourning. Commissioner Chavez?
Yes.
Mr. Einhorn?
Yes.
Mr. Fusashi?
Yes.
Mr. Hankins? Mr. Hankins?
He's muted.
I'm sorry. Yes.
Thank you. You would like to stay longer?
No.
Okay. Mr. Streeter?
Yes.
And Owen Egan, yes. Thank you all. Great job. Yeah. Thank you, Mary.
Thank you all.
Mr. Chairman, have a happy St. Patrick's Day.
Oh, okay. Thank you. You too.
Thanks. You too.
Happy St. Patrick's Day.
Bye-bye, everyone.
Bye-bye.